welcome to a new podcast where we're breaking through and breaking it down with a new girl, your host, Dawn Piercy. Okay, hold on. For some reason, it's wanting me to put in the string key again. All right.
Why is it on the phones that they only have such a little box? Or am I able to bring you up bigger also? Why?
Well, you know what? That's a good question. On my computer, it doesn't show a little box.
Yeah, because I'm on my phone. And of course, I had to use my iPad here. But uh-huh. I was trying to do it on my iPad, but I don't have my, the ID written down. So it asked me to download and put the ID in for the iCloud, whatever. And I don't remember that to this day. It was driving me crazy.
Oh, boy. So, well, would it be the same as your iPhone?
But I don't think I even have it in notes, though. You know, I was looking in the notes to to see if I have it. Because I think maybe on the iPad it might come up a lot more, huh? A lot better.
I don't know, but I know when you watch the interview after, it'll look normal. And you'll be able to see both of us.
Okay. Yeah, that's too much work there.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to start. Stream. All right, we should be going live here in a minute. Okay. Welcome to Mariano Big Dog's Corner here on a new podcast. I am your host, Dawn Piercy. Our co-host, Mariano Mendoza, he is running late today. I want to welcome you, Master Joe Lee. Welcome to Big Dog's Corner here on a new podcast. How are you?
Thanks for having me, Dawn. Pleasure.
Hello, everybody. Now, Master Jolie, not only is he a martial arts master, but he's also an actor and a stuntman. And now, according to the research I've done, you got your first black belt at 11 years old, and you actually started training at 7. Can you tell us your story? Because I know that it's truly an inspirational one.
Might make you cry.
I know.
Kleenexes. Well, I don't know. Once again, thanks for having me. And if I get shaken up a little bit talking about it, because it's rough, you know. I was adopted. Don't know my parents. I was born in Buffalo, New York, actually, in a Queens hospital, as far as I remember anything back then. Somehow shipped in a bread box, ended up in Louisiana in an orphanage home. And out of the orphanage home, very vividly, I can remember the day I was adopted. And that's all I can remember is at that young of an age. I was 4.5 years old. And then from the adopted parents, they divorced 3 years later and ended up putting me in a boys' home. And the name of that boys' home was called Hope Haven Madonna Manor, in the city of West Wego, Louisiana. And they have one side is a big kid side and the other side is a little boy side. And so I began my life there without family, living in a boys' home, you know, because my adopted parents divorced and separated, and just paid pretty much my adopted brother David and myself, we were disbanded, and one on one side, one on the other side. And that's why I say, you know, for people out there that don't believe in God, it took me a while to realize that you have to have a religion in life. And I, you know, no offense to anybody who's not a Christian,
right?
But there's higher power above, and it's just not you and I on this earth calling the shots. So when we can learn how to put our life in the hands of the mighty power above, everything kind of finds its way to gold, you know?
Yeah, it does.
Well, with that said, I pretty much was on my own living out there in the boys' home, waking up every day, doing the normal things you do, go to school, learn trades, get in a trade school, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, not a kid who came from a bad background, mm-hmm. you know, anything, just for the child that was given up. And so I got chosen in that boys' home to be in a group of 15 and what they call the special house. And it was a house on the boys' home itself on Barataria Boulevard. Mm-hmm. So I was one out of those 15 that were considered the privileged kids. So we had a chance to go to public schools and other schools and stuff like that that other kids couldn't do. They had to stay to the school that was on site. So we made some enemies by being, when you're in kids, you know, in life that happens. So I had a very athletic when I was young, and still to this day, playing some football in the field out there, and it was tackle football, and a couple of the kids got really rough with us. And they used to watch us lift weights and work out and stuff with a couple of what they called brothers back then, the people who were staff members. And we got our rooms vandalized because they were jealous of us because we were good at what we did. And that's at 8, 9 years old, okay, when I'm talking right now. And I never forget that day I was walked back into the weight room and the weights were thrown all over the place. The bench was cut in half and ripped up. Our bedrooms were torn apart. And it was two kids in that place who had did that to us and three other guys. I wasn't the only kid that it happened to. So then we got into a physical altercation in the what they call the mess hall of the cafeteria. And I took care of myself at 7 years old, didn't know what I was doing, but I was doing something, and I pretty much beat both the guys up at seven. Mm-hmm. Ended up in the principal's room with the main priest and the brothers and the nuns and everything that in the place, and they said that it wasn't my fault. Everybody knew it. It wasn't the other kid's fault. We were helping each other out. We were defending ourselves. So parents had to get involved, but we didn't have anybody come to our aid for parents meeting or anything because my parents didn't care about it, my adopted parents. So I was still left alone at that part of my life, and I still can remember every bit of that. And the other kids' parents came to the meeting, and they only they apologized to us mm-hmm. as a human being what happened that their kids, from their kids' action. This is 7, 8-year-old kids that they're right. talking about. The time, and I just said, and I remember the words I remember at that time, it's okay, you know, we can be friends. I got up and I shook his hand and gave him a hug and everything else. And the brother, his name was Brother Larry at the time, he says they called me Joey years ago, right before Joe Lee, it was Joseph Lee, they called me Joey, right? Mm-hmm. Joey, we're gonna put you in a program. How would you like to go to martial arts school? And that was Master Charles Parks, you know, Taekwondo. And so because we had a fight, I earned a free class. It was weird how it happened. The brothers paid for me to go to karate school. So that's actually how I started karate.
Okay,
By being in a boys' home, by having that one little altercation. Mm-hmm. And they always told me that if you kept your mind level the way you did here in this office, you're never going to get in a fight and never have to worry about anything in your life if you kept the mindset you had today. And this was 8 years old when they're talking to
right.
me. You know what I mean? So long story short, my adopted mother, we have weekends. They're supposed to pick us up for Christmas mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And I got a weekend over at the house, and it was a Christmas weekend, 4 or 5 days up and go. I haven't seen her in a while, like a long time and everything. And I was surprised they even picked us up. And I believe I was turning 9 at that time. And my brother, my adopted brother, he didn't know anything about that family of mine, right? Mm-hmm. And because they adopted us in 2 different times and kept us separated. So I went ahead and went home on that weekend. True story, while I'm at the swimming pool at the apartment building, playing with kids who were black and Latin, mm-hmm. My adopted mother pulled me by my hair, brought me upstairs, cut my hair off, bald, made me sit on rice, kneel on rice in the corner, and said to me, "You will never talk to a black man or a Spanish person in your life ever, blah, 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 blah." Took a belt, whipped me, did you name it, beat me down that day. I stood up for myself after, and when I started to stand up for myself, to fight back, like, for her abusing me,
right?
Her aunt Effie walked in the door and saw that and stopped her, turned around and grabbed me, started shielding me from her trying to crack me and everything over because I was at a pool with different race, right?
Mm-hmm.
So can you imagine being that instilled in a kid at 9 years old, going through that? And never have I ever had a prejudice bone in my body, right? To this day. So I went ahead and went to sleep after my aunt cooled her off. I remember sleeping, and I woke up in the middle of the night. I was 9 years old, okay? And her keys were on the wall, on the keychain on the wall. Mm-hmm. She had a 1971 or 72 Oldsmobile, I think it was. I took that car, never drove a car in my life. I drove the car from New Orleans, East Louisiana, all the way to West Wego, Louisiana,
mm-hmm.
back to where the boys' home was at, but further than that, and knocked on a friend of mine's door, who was a friend of mine in a family that kind of was really good to me,
mm-hmm.
and I knocked on that door. It was, oh, it must have been 3:40 in the morning, something like that, when I got there, and they didn't realize how me drove that car. I forgot how many miles it was, and I was looking up like that and everything, trying to do what I'm doing. I can just remember watching people drive and knowing this is how I'm doing, and I got there. So then she calls my adopted mom, told her where to pick the car up, and that started myself right then at 9 years old being on my own from that time, because my adopted mother gave total custody up of me after that happened to me. And I didn't want to go back with her anyway because I didn't want to get abused. And right. the people I stayed with, they took care of me and took me in and kept me in school. But I had to go back to the boys' home and face them, right? And the same week, the next week coming, and then it all started coming together of them trying to place me in a better living situation and not with my mom because they know what she's doing by trying to give right. up custody. And then my dad got involved. My adopted father got involved because they called him. And I got it on camera, true story, everything. He came to the place to get me out. And I could not stay there anymore because they didn't want me to live in the boys' home forever. So they said, "We're going to release you with your dad. Go live with him. Good luck, blah, 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 blah." I couldn't live with him. He didn't even let me stay there with him. He put me in one of his girlfriend's houses.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going on 10 at this time when all this was taking place. He put me on one of his girlfriend's houses. And that's how I started off living on my own in a house, 10, 11 years old, a kid with no parents, nobody looking over you except adopted dad lives 3 blocks away, who would come over and give me food and take care of me and let me go to school. But I couldn't live with him because you live in an old folks home and kids were not allowed. So that's the beginning of it, Dawn. And when I asked you about the book,
right,
about writing, how serious that I am, because I've accomplished and achieved a lot of things in my life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that God's got a plan out there for all of us. And we go through hardship in life just to get to where he wants us, not right. where I want.
I know exactly what you mean. I wanted to ask you about trials and tribulations. Being able to take these trials and these tribulations and not shut the door on them, but actually live to the point to where you've become so inspirational and you're helping others. And I think that's just absolutely miraculous. And how did you get into acting and doing stunts? And mushing that together, and did that help you get through your trials and tribulations?
It was a dream that I was chasing as a kid. Mm-hmm. And I've always looked up to Chuck Norris as a kid, right? Like, look back at the Long Wolf McQuaid and all those Chuck Norris Bruce Lee movies. And used to go to Orpheum Theater for $1 and watch 5 movies a day, you know. Don't want to get too far ahead of myself on that story with the mass parks and everything, but being in martial arts, all the tournaments and learning and the belt system, it gave me a lot of structure and discipline. And I got to give props out to the name Dwayne Conrad and his brother, Eddie Conrad. They're also friends on my Facebook. They're the family that took care of me back in New Orleans. And believe it or not, true story, the great Fats Domino saved me, took care of me for a little while. And that was my path to start to get out of Louisiana and come to the West Coast to try to start getting into the film industry. And I don't know if I can, if we have time, the 13 minutes ago with that whole story, but I want 13 minutes and I'll be here all night telling you my life story. You know what I mean? Like Mariano probably would say, oh man, let's make another story just on that by itself. Right? You know what I mean?
Part one, part two,
chapter 1, chapter 2. I don't know, but anyway, real brief, martial arts changed my life. And I think it changes everybody's life, because being a master now and just hearing the comments and people have told me about their sons and daughters, and I got them written. They're on this book. They're on Facebook. People are praising me for Master Joe. You changed my son's life. That means a lot to me.
Yeah.
You know, because I had a hard with my boys, and I fought a battle to keep them out of the gang and mm-hmm. stuff. And they're both, my two oldest, they're both doing good. One's graduating, and the other one's 22.9. He's a X-ray technician now, you know.
Nice.
Doing good for himself at 22. But
so tell us, do you have any projects that you're working on behind the scenes that you could let us in on? I know that you've have a few projects that you're in post-production from that you've been in stunts with. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I hate to say it out there, and people in Hollywood, you're hearing a story that's true, that needs to be written. And to answer Miss Dorn's question, those movies that I got in a speaking role, a stunt role, I didn't go looking for them. Did not go looking for them. Happened to be at the right place, right time. Somebody said, call that guy right there.
Nice.
Come over here. How you doing? My name is such and such. Can you work the show for me? Blah, 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 mm-hmm. blah. I'm like, yes, sir. He goes, well, I got a show I'm doing, and I want you to be a part of it, and I want you to play a thug. This is what you're going to do. No problem. Thank you, sir. You're a stuntman. Yes, sir. You don't know nothing about my capabilities. I said, I believe in safety, number one.
Right.
And I got the movie called The Pastor like that, mm-hmm. And just ended up with Kevin Sorbo, and I forgot the other gentleman's name, the main character who played the pastor. He beat me up with the Bible. And, you know, and I got to tell you, it's true, because, you know, going through our lives, I'm not the only actor and stuntman that suffers, okay?
Right.
We choose a business that is really rough to be in. And everybody's got a story. We all go through, man, why are we getting this business? You know, mm-hmm. It's a rough business mm-hmm. to get into. One day it's going to happen, and I'm going to support my family, my children, and, you know, give back to the community. You know, that's a goal and a dream. But that's how I got that movie, just being at the right place, right time. Ended mm-hmm. up going there. The guy doesn't know nothing about me. I meet all the stunt guys. I meet people I've seen, know before. And then action. Here's what you're going to do. Boom. Bam.
That's a blessing. You know?
Yeah, it's a blessing. And then to go home and sit and pray about it and wake up the next morning and not have nothing to do but going through what you're going through,
right,
and realize that we got a plan here. What's going on? For the movie, what is it? Glass Jaw.
Okay.
Let me tell you what happened with that movie. There's a great guy. His name is Jeff, the director, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he had a casting. Mm-hmm. He had a casting director work for him on that film. I forgot her name, but she apparently picked me out of a, you know, photos, I guess, mm-hmm. somehow. And I got a phone call. Would I be interested to be available to work on a movie called Glass Jaw? And I said, who wouldn't? I go, yes, right. I would. Well, you're going to fight that wrestler. They couldn't get him at the time. I don't remember his name. You know, he's retired now, got the tan, really good tan, really built. I don't remember his name, to tell you the truth. And I guess they couldn't get the wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me it was Frank Trigg, right? That I have a fight scene with Frank Trigg. That I'm going to play a bad guy. And I'm going, wow, this is amazing. A part of my career that I'm going to work on a set tomorrow. I'm going to end up having a fight scene with a legend, Frank Trigg. Wow, this is another dream come true, right? So I'm all psyched up, man. I'm stretching it, my body all loosened, my pads ready to go. And I get the set, and the director sees me. We kind of walk. He hit pass together. I didn't know he was a director. I didn't meet him yet, but we kind of walked and hit pass. He looked at me and goes, hey, how you doing? He goes, man, so you're the one. I said, what do you mean? He goes, you're just what I thought. You got the tattoo in the head, and man, you look like Chuck Liddell. You look like Chuck Liddell. And that was funny, and I said, well, that's funny you say that, but I'm going to tell you the truth. He looks like me because I'm the oldest, right? And he laughed. And he goes, well, look, he goes, you look great. He goes, how about you do me a favor to change the wardrobe, and I want to see the arms and take off the shirt, and you're going to be shirtless for this, and the arms. And I was just like, oh, shit, I haven't been in the gym. I wasn't super pumped up. I had a little flab on the side. I'm going, okay, it is what it is. I'm going to get paid, you know. And then when I saw Frank, I didn't feel so bad. I was like, oh, shoot, Frank's, you know, he's not in shape that he was either. So I was like, oh, good, I'm going to have a good scene here, you know. And then I met Charlie Paterni, very good man, stunt guy. He got to talking to me, a stunt coordinator, and says, Joe, you guys work hand in hand here. Let's put the scene together. This is what I want. This is what they're looking for. You guys figure it out and make it happen, and let's do it. And Frank and I put something together, and it was very good. They let me add my 2 cents. He added his, and we put a nice little scene together, and when we went to the red carpet, I actually sat with the coordinator next to producers and the main character and Khalifa, mm-hmm. Lee Khalifa, the main mm-hmm. character. That was another blessing. It brought a tear in my eye to go, wow, look at this. This is right. What I came out here for. Another big event for me, and I'm sitting down, and Lee's wife next to me, she's pushing my arm and hitting me in the arm. She goes, look, watch this. Here you go. And like the whole place just went like kind of crazy when I saw the fight scene. And I was amazed at myself, like, wow, that was me. And that was the first time I was super amazed that, wow, that they started seeing a little bit of my craft that mm-hmm. nobody's ever saw yet. But that's the beginning of that. And it was good for me. You know, I felt good.
Tell me about guacamole style.
Oh, well, there's an old, back in the day, it's called cage combat.
Yes.
Neutral grounds. A guy named Kaja and a guy named Ryan Chenoweth, they had a thing called cage combat.
Okay.
In a side company called Old School Bad Boys Neutral Grounds Gym. And a guy named Maverick and Antonio McKee.
Okay.
John Marsh, a bunch of different guys. They train there. They spar there. They train. And a lot of fighters coming from out of town and overseas and everywhere, getting in the back of the yard in a cage and just duking it out, right? Or mm-hmm. some place called Dancing mm-hmm. Waters and just going for it. And I was already, at that time, I was already in L.A., instructing in one of my gyms at the time. And I had met a guy named Maverick, the Soul Collector, Maverick Harvey, the Soul Collector.
I interviewed him.
No, did you?
Yes.
Oh, great. Awesome. And I met him, and I came from L.A. to be with him on a Tuesday and Thursday night at the gym over there where they were at. He lived there.
Okay.
And every week they would have fights.
Mm-hmm.
And people would come all over the place and fight. And he asked me after we met, and could I come out and train there on a Tuesday night and help teach some of the guys? And I said, sure. And that's how that started there.
With me
being that element in that whole world by starting to teach guys the fitness and the stuff that I was doing. And so one day, my longshoreman client, 8 o'clock in the morning class,
mm-hmm.
he's 460 pounds. His friends were 260, 280, and they brought Subway sandwiches to the gym. Okay, 8 a.m. They must have took them right out of the microwave or something. And I had a guy named Nacho Ortiz. He owns the Ojas Tea Shop in the city of San Pedro. And I was rehabbing his knee at the time, that early in the morning.
Uh-huh.
So he goes, Master Joe Lee, Manny dropped guacamole on your mat. And I said, what? I didn't know what guacamole was, Don. Okay. Bob, sorry. And so I went over there, I looked down, and there was guacamole on the mat. And I said, well, dude, did you come here to work? Did you come here to work out, or did you come here to drop guacamole on my mat? What are you doing? He goes, Master Joe, I'm so hungry, man. I said, well, you come here to train or you come here to pick this guacamole up? And it stuck with me, right? That for some reason, right after Nacho goes, hey, Master Joe, with all them Spanish kids you got, you don't know what guacamole is? And I said, dude, you got to rub that in on me? I said, okay, guacamole, clean that guacamole up like that. And it stuck with me. So because I didn't know what guacamole was, and all my children are Spanish descent, I should have known what guacamole was, and I didn't. So I created the guacamole style, right, off of a phone call. And I'll tell you how that happened. A guy named Mike Albergo, he lives in New York now.
Uh-huh.
He calls me up. He says, Joe, I got to tell you, man, I just saw a Subway commercial. True story, okay? I just saw a Subway commercial, and this is why I'm calling you, because I thought about you again, man. He goes, and they said, welcome to Subway. Would you like guacamole with that? And he thought about me, I guess. So he had to call me and says, hey, man, the commercial made me think about you. So I wanted to call and see how you were doing. I said, over the word guacamole? I said, dude, I got to patent this one day or figure out this too soon, because this is going to be cool for me one day. And I just said, you know what? Guacamole style. That's how it is.
Nice.
So,
love
it. A little bit. You get a laugh, you don't get a laugh, whatever. You don't know what it is, it's cool. You know, guacamole.
I love guacamole. You know? That's good.
But actually, it's this right here, the style, the patience, because I got it at 54.
Right.
Dana White, you want to let me prove it to somebody, I'll prove it right here. At 54, I'll go out there and take somebody's belt. I guarantee it. You know?
I bet you could.
Oh, yeah.
I know that you're in the gym a lot. So, now, for our guests that want to keep up and follow you, where can they follow you at?
You're asking the wrong person.
Well, I can tell them this. If they go to your bio page, I actually put...
Hey, I got Facebook. Let's see. I have Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Joseph Lee Michael at Facebook. What is it? One Master Joe Lee at...
the Instagram.
What is it? Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
The iStunt profile, Joseph Lee Michael at iStunt.com.
Okay.
Wally Crowder, Stunt Players Directory. And, of course, the IMDb, which I was very pleased that the lady who executive helped me do that, because I didn't do nothing with that.
Oh,
and
that's great.
I didn't know what I was doing when it came to that. I was begging as an actor, going, how do I get my stuff? How do I make a reel? What do I do? And, you know, I finally start figuring the stuff out, you know. But
well,
I'm so old school, Don. Like I said, handshakes, hugs, eye contact. That's what I'm about, because I'm for real. I don't want to have this beam me up Scotty life. But unfortunately, we got to do what we're doing here just to get noticed. It's weird,
I know. Technology. God love it. I know.
Beam me up, Scotty. Beam me up.
Well, it's been great having you on as a new guest, and I wanted to thank you for being a guest. And for our listeners, if you go to the newpodcast.com on Mariano Big Dog's Corner and see Master Jolie's bio, I'm going to add the interview there, and there's links to his social media. Click follow, check out the projects he's got coming up, and this has been a new podcast.
Amen.
Amen. I got it.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.